burger.
Everybody, give it a big warm welcome. It sounds a little bit different because I am using audio equipment that I brought home with me from school. I was just playing around with it, and then I realized, oh, I should just record the pod onto it too. So, it is just your boy, the Sweet Keeks, tonight. TC is out and about. He's got family stuff that he was committed to today. So, it is just me. It's a solo pod, but that still means that's good things coming up. One. We're recapping CinemaCon. See what kind of things were announced. Happened in Las Vegas at Caesar's Palace. Some pretty fun, interesting things that happened. The next thing is, I am in Cannes. Basically, I'm heading off to Cannes a month from today. So, I'm going to go over some of the things that I'm excited to watch. They just announced the slate of films that will be premiering at Cannes. Some heavy hitters, some kind of underrated things that I'm excited to look at. And then it is a review of Alex Garland's newest film, Civil War. We are big fans of Alex Garland. I loved Men, loved Annihilation, love Ex Machina. So let's see if he's gone 4 for 4 in his films. But first thing that I want to say is, TC, hope you're having a good time with family. Hope everything's going well. As far as for me, what the heck have I been doing? I can't even. This week was like a weirdly, not like a super slow week, but it was definitely a slower week. I feel like I've been going nonstop for the last 3 months. So it was weird. Last week, I just kind of sat in my desk. And as I was going through my to-do list, I was like, okay, well, I've got this massive teacher test that I just got done taking. No more really competitions. I had some videos I had to submit last Friday for students, but that wasn't too nuts. So, yeah, I just kind of was able to hang out, go to the gym a little bit, hang out with Becky. We're going to Disney this week. It is Star Wars night on this Thursday. So we're going for Star Wars night on Thursday. And then Friday we're going to California Adventure and coming home Saturday morning, afternoon-ish. And that's going to be a good time, going with me and Becky and Jake and Jack, my friends I make movies with. You can never go wrong with Disney. I'm trying to think of a scenario where, like, what would I rather do instead of go to Disney? I'll be honest, if someone next year was like, hey, you can either go to Cannes or you can go to Disneyland, like, I'm definitely going to Cannes. Like, I would definitely go to Cannes again. If they were like Disney World, but like you get to stay at one of the really nice hotels that's really close to the good parks and you get like an extra bit of time, I think I would mull it over. I'm not going to say that I would take it automatically, but definitely like I would hesitate at that. I still feel like there's so much more that I want to do at Disney World, even though I've kind of already done everything. I'm going to move. See if that helps anything. There's like a weird humming in the back, but Becky's also Becky. Last year, as many of y'all know, we went to Coachella. Coachella was a very, very fun time. We loved going. It was really, really exciting, kind of a different experience. This year, obviously, yeah, we didn't go. But we do like to do what is known as Couchella, where you watch the live stream of the different performances on YouTube. And that's been pretty fun. That's been pretty cool. We've watched some pretty good ones. Feeling really nice about the state of music, of which I know almost nothing about. But something that I do know about, and even when I say I know about it, it's not like I know a ton about it, but there's a few things that I'm looking forward to. And first off, it is Cannes. Cannes has some pretty great filmmakers that are going to be premiering in competition. I think some ones that stand off, first off, is Sean Baker, who's done Red Rocket, and he did Tangerine, and he did Florida Project. His new film, Anora, will be premiering as part of competition. We've got Yorgos Lanthimos's Kinds of Kindness, Paul Schrader's O Canada. Those are the ones that are really sticking out to me. But the big one that Oh, another one is The Apprentice. It's kind of the Donald Trump film where Sebastian Stan is playing Donald Trump in the 70s. So I'm interested in that one. I'm not, like, clamoring to see it. But the big one, the heavy hitter, is Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis will be playing Friday, May 17th at the Cannes Film Festival. For what it's worth, I'm torn because I really want to see this movie to say that I've seen this movie. But, like, I don't know. I'm not a massive Francis Ford Coppola film or fan. I think that, like, like the Godfather movies are good. They're good. I don't love The Conversation. And it's not like I've seen a lot of his movies, but the ones that I have seen, I'm not, like, haven't made me clamor to watch more of his stuff. But I am very excited, and kind of the ones that I'm looking at in competition that I'm dying to see are The Shrouds by David Cronenberg, Kinds of Kindness by Yorgos Lanthimos, and O Canada by Paul Schrader. Paul Schrader wrote Taxi Driver. He also directed First Reformed. Very kind of a interesting guy in the film world. Has made some pretty interesting movies, so. And I like all the movies that I've seen of his that he's made. First Reformed is awesome. Obviously, Taxi Driver is a classic. So I'm clamoring. I really, really want to watch O Canada. So those are kind of the ones that we're looking forward to. Now, there are some films that are playing that are not part of the competition, but they're a little bit more of, I think, what would be known as kind of like a like an honorable mention type thing. A lot of these are foreign films, and I couldn't tell you who any of them are. But I think that's what's going to make it very interesting as well. How it works at Cannes is the tickets are released to ticket holders, to pass holders, 4 days before the premiere. So I had to go through a process of getting accredited, sending in my credits into Cannes so that they could process me and say, yes, this person works in the film industry. Through our 48-hour film project, I guess like backer, we were able to get through. And so 4 days before these films premiere. So for example, if I want to go watch O Canada and it's playing March 20th or May 20th, the tickets will be released to the public May 16th. So I got to make sure, like, it's kind of like a sneakers drop where it's like, oh, I want the new Travis Scott Jordan 3s. You better come prepared with a prayer, a burnt offering, and possibly one of your children to sacrifice, because I don't know how easy or hard it's going to be. But excited to watch some of these. There are a few that are performing out of competition that I am very excited for. There's four of them. She's Got No Name by Chan Peter Ho-sun. Horizon, An American Saga by Kevin Costner. Rumors by Evan Johnson, Galen Johnson, and Guy Madden. And then Furiosa, A Mad Max Saga by George Miller. Two of these. Obviously, Furiosa. Gotta see it. It comes out, like, I think a week before. Like, it premieres a week before it actually comes out. But Horizon is really special for Utah because Kevin Costner has footed the bill, baby. And Warner Brothers was like, yeah, we'll come around. We'll distribute it for you. The two-parter film comes out this summer, like 2 months apart from each other. And then they're looking to film the next two parts soon. I would imagine this summer is when they want to film. So depending on how well these perform is going to see where the state of Utah filmmaking is going to be in the next 5 to 10 years. Kevin Costner has recently stated his desire to build a film studio in St. George, which is southern Utah. Lots of red rocks, lots of really unique imagery that's kind of singular to the Western genre. And me, Jake, and Jack are like, we're going to be one of the first in line to check this out because it's a Utah-made production. And that's going to be really exciting for us to kind of be able to come back and be like, and listen, I'm going to be very honest. From the trailers, I am not looking super impressed. I think it looks like it kind of stinks. But I'm willing to be proven wrong that doesn't stink. So I'm excited for that. We have got a few friends that are in the film or who have helped work on the film, so that's exciting. We've got some midnight screenings, and there's some Cannes premieres all by people who I'm like, I don't know who these people are, and same with special screenings. We'll see what it is, but there are still some heavy hitters who are going to be here. There's going to be plenty of stuff. Our film will be screened part of the Short Film Corner. Wednesday, May 22nd, we'll be able to go a part of the red carpet. We've got our special premiere passes, going to be able to get our pictures taken and all that stuff. And our buddy Jack made a funny, nice little comment of, hey, it's going to be really nice to have a picture of us with Getty Images watermarked on the front. So I guess keep a lookout for those. I had to reach out for red carpet accommodations just so we could, you know, start getting that stuff planned out. So in one more month, it's going to be really, really exciting stuff. Now, let's kind of shift our gears over a little bit, okay? When we talk about shifting gears, I think the big thing that we looked at is this last week, we had a big presentation from CinemaCon, where it's essentially, if you all remember, it technically doesn't exist anymore, but E3 was the really, really big video game presentation conference where all of these big studios, gaming studios, Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft, EA, all these big gaming studios came forward and was like, here's what we've got coming out in the next little bit. And that's exactly what CinemaCon is. They're basically like, okay, Sony, Disney, Warner Bros., Lionsgate, all these big production companies, Universal, showed up and said, all right, here's what we've got coming out this year. And it's generally for theater distributors, press, people in the film industry to come take a look at what they've got coming on. And when you really look at it, I think the big one that a lot of people were talking about is Sony was not present. So no Sony as part of the presentation, but also I feel like, yeah, what are they going to do? Show up and be like, sorry about Madam Web. We thought Sydney Sweeney would get butts into seats, and we were wrong. We're going to show up and be like, hey, we've got Kraven the Hunter and another Venom movie coming out this year. We don't know if you'll like them. We don't know if they're good, but they could be good, so you should give us a shot. You know what I mean? I don't know what they're looking at there. But I think if we look at that first day, was Universal. And Universal, or not Universal, it was Warner Brothers. It was kind of a cool, presentation where they talked about Superman. They've talked about these different things coming along. Okay, I'm going to hold up. Let me pull up this. They also started to release the Joker Folie à Deux trailer. Honestly, and we both really liked the last one, but I think it's kind of soured on me. Like, I've no desire to rewatch it. It's a very dour movie, but I'm willing. Apparently, they also showed new footage of Beetlejuice, and it looks really, really good. Additionally, they showed a trailer for Bong Joon-ho's new film with Robert Pattinson called Mickey 17, which is a sci-fi movie where Robert Pattinson plays a guy who keeps dying and getting cloned and coming back to life. So we're excited. James Gunn also was like, hey, we don't have any footage of the new Superman, which you guys are all dying to see. But I'll just let you know that it is a movie and it's being made, and we'll show you more of it next year. So that will be exciting. The one that I think is like universal, let's be honest. If we're going to look at something that's just really not going to work, and that is that new Wicked movie. It's being distributed by Universal, being made by them. It's a two-parter based on the musical that premiered on Broadway about 20 years ago. Kind of the backstory behind The Wizard of Oz. Gives some context and a little bit of revisionist history to those characters. If you're not going to have that main cast doing those songs, it makes me really worried, because that's like, me and Becky were in New York 5 years ago, and we had seen Phantom of the Opera the night before, and the next day we were planning on going on like a shopping spree at Kith, which is like my favorite clothing brand. And we thought, what if we didn't go to Kith and spent money there? What if we went to Wicked? And I thought, it sounds different. Let's do it. Let's go do Wicked. And boy, was I wrong, because all of those songs that I had heard sung by Adele Dazeem and Kristen Chenoweth, I know it's not Adele Dazeem, but if you know the reference, then you know what it is. Got me really excited to see it. It just was not the same. Even though you have Cynthia Erivo and you've got Ariana Grande as kind of the two titular character, not titular characters, you got the two, what is it, the Wicked Witch of the East and the good Glenda the Good Witch or whatever. You know, I'd be curious to see how well it's going to work. Apparently people aren't feeling super good about it. However, Twisters, give me Glenn Powell. That's all I want. I'm very okay with if every movie was like, hey, here's Glenn Powell. Kind of like how Jesse Plemons shows up in the movies. You got a little bit dose of Glenn Powell in every film. I would be chuffed, as the British would say. Speaking of Jesse Plemons showing up, we're going to talk about that when we talk about, what's it called? Civil War in just a little bit. So Universal, I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting. They've also got The Fall Guy, Abigail. They've got some movies coming out that I think are going to be interesting. They also showed off some bits and pieces of Nosferatu, which is being distributed by Focus Features. And I think that's going to be good. It's Robert Eggers. Again, he has not made a bad film for me, so I'm very excited. Now, one of them that I thought was very interesting. Apparently, so to give some background, this next studio that showed off some films is Paramount. Paramount has been going through a lot of rumors that they're looking to be bought by another studio and to be merged, kind of like what Fox did with Disney about 4 or 5 years ago. And they did show footage from Gladiator 2, which comes out this holiday season. And they also showed footage from this weird Transformers prequel film called Transformers 1. And apparently people thought that it looked like it stunk. We'll see if they're right or not. Another one, though, is I heard that they are developing a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles R-rated Last Ronin project, which is essentially like a Raphael-driven Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles project. And the big thing that I have to beg to ask is, what is with the adultification of child entertainment? And, you know, I think if you looked over at that X-Men 97, which is a fantastic show, it's a little bit more adult, but it tries to stay in the kids' realm, even though, you know, all the kids that watched that X-Men animated show in the 90s, they are now, you know, 30, 40 years old. It's interesting to see them do this with Ninja Turtles. Now, I know that Ninja Turtles do have some more darker time comic book lines, and they can be a little bit more violent. Historically speaking, they're generally for children, but I do wonder is if as the audience ages, you know, we all loved the Ninja Turtles in the 90s as kids. I wonder if kids nowadays are not as, like, locked into the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So all of these, so Paramount owning the rights to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I'm just going to call it TMNT from now on, are thinking, okay, our audience is not kids anymore. They don't really care about the Ninja Turtles. But if we cater it more to adults, that could kind of cast a wider net. So that sounds interesting. I'm interested about that. They're also planning a Transformers G.I. Joe collaboration film, which if you watched Rise of the Beast last year, that stinger at the end of the post-credit sequence, you're like, what? These are the same thing. It's, you know, kind of weird. So we'll see about that. Lionsgate, let's just be honest. Lionsgate is definitely a studio that exists, probably most famously known for making the John Wick movies. And their spinoff movie, Ballerina, was teased and talked about. It went through a lot of reshoots, and I think people were kind of panicking. But apparently, Chad Stahelski, the director of John Wick, was brought in to kind of beef up the action sequences. I think especially with how each John Wick film has gotten bigger and better with their set pieces, you can't sacrifice that for a lot of these films. So it looks like they're kind of getting a little bit of an overhaul. Apparently, they also showed a glimpse of their Michael Jackson biopic called Michael, which, I don't know. I love Michael Jackson. I love his music. I just don't know how you make that movie And it feels like if you don't address the whole Neverland thing, which I don't know if they will or they won't, they might touch on it a little bit. But it generally feels like a lot of these biopics are heavily sanitized. And that is a big aspect of kind of the last 15 years of his life, unfortunately, or, you know, all that controversy. So, like we always say, you hope it's good. You always hope that it's good, but you just never know, do you? And then I think, like, the, not the last one, but it is kind of the last big one, was Disney. Disney kind of came through. They showed a lot of footage. They showed off Deadpool and Wolverine. They talked about Moana 2. They showed off Mufasa the Lion King, Inside Out 2, Alien Romulus. And listen, I think Disney has had a big slump over the last 2 years. Their films are not hitting like they're used to. Marvel's not where it was. Star Wars is just lost in the Sarlacc pit right now. Their live action remakes are not doing what they're supposed to do. However, this Mufasa the Lion King is very interesting to me with Barry Jenkins directing it. You know, he kind of came out and was like, "Oh, isn't it weird that it's me, Barry Jenkins, one of the best filmmakers to come out in the last 10 years? Isn't it weird that I'm making a Lion King movie? I'm just really excited to make it because I feel really attached to the story." And it's like, okay, Barry, I'm sure you did. I'm sure you're really excited about it. And I really hope that you are. But I think you could also come out and also say, I'm really excited about the story, and I'm really excited about the paycheck that hit my bank account a few months ago. That thing looks nice. And now I can go make other really cool projects like the Underground Railroad, or like If Beale Street Could Talk, or Moonlight, which I'm looking forward to whatever those are. And I'm also looking forward to Mufasa the Lion King. Alien Romulus, I love the Alien movies. I do not love Covenant, but I love Prometheus. Prometheus is super cool. Alien, Aliens, Alien vs. Predator. Anything where I can see that gross little phallic xenomorph popping onto my screen, I'll take it. I'll take any chance that I can. And then finally, if you look at something like Deadpool and Wolverine, fun. I think that Kevin Feige said the F word on stage and was like, we can do that now because Deadpool is part of the MCU. And I don't know. Part of me thinks that this film is going to be the most obnoxious out of all of them. And hopefully it's good. Like, you hope that it's good. Because I remember when they announced that Hugh Jackman would be back as Wolverine, I, along with a lot of others, were kind of like, uh-oh. This feels like not a good idea. Logan was a really great film. I hope that they're giving him a lot of money, that he just made him an offer he couldn't refuse, and we'll just see what that looks like. So, there is your recap of CinemaCon and Cannes. Oh my gosh. Now we're going to talk about Civil War, which are three C's. It's the three C's that we're talking about today. I did not even plan that. I'm just realizing that right now. So, we're talking about Civil War right now, written and directed by Alex Garland, his follow-up to 2022? Is that when it came out? 2022's Men, which was a follow-up to an Annihilation, which I believe came out in 2018, which was a follow-up to Ex Machina, which I think came out in 2014. And Civil War tells the story of an alternate version of America. It doesn't specify why, but are in the midst of a civil war that seemingly started because of the actions of a fascist president portrayed by Nick Offerman, and journalists are traveling from New York to Washington, D.C. to hopefully get a comment from the president. And it's an interesting slice of life slash cautionary tale about the state of the political landscape in the United States. That's the first thing that I'll touch on. I liked Civil War. I think that Civil War does a very good job at building tension and creating disturbing, effective imagery. There is a scene, the scene involving Jesse Plemons, which everyone has said is the best part of the movie, and I actually would partially agree. I really liked that scene. There is a scene where one of the characters gets knocked into a pit, and she's trying to get out of the pit, and the shot of her trying to get out is like, oh my gosh, there's just like a lot of death going on in this movie. There's also some really great The reason that I like that it's a little bit slice of life is as they're traveling south to Washington, D.C., you're getting kind of these glimpses at how the United States lives. If I had a bit of a nitpick, it's not so much of a nitpick, but I would kind of like to see what the rest of this place looks like. I would actually be really curious if A24 developed some sort of a series based on this movie to show, you know, a couple of the characters talk about, well, I'm from Colorado, I'm from Missouri. They don't think it's really happening out there. And I would be curious to see some different areas affected by this civil war. Because you only really get to see the East Coast. So you do see them traveling through, like, North and South Carolina, which is... Actually, are they even... No, they wouldn't go that far, because those are more south than Washington, D.C. But they go through country areas. They go through small towns. They go through kind of, like, these refugee camps. And to see a little bit of how each city lives was pretty interesting. Another sequence that I love is they're going through the small town and everyone's just kind of going about their day. And the group inside of the car is like, wow, it's almost like, are we in a different country? This looks so different. And the reveal at the end right before they leave is like, oh yeah, kind of. But no, they're definitely still aware of what is going on here and what's going on with the Civil War. One thing that pops into my mind, though, is, you know, when the Civil War happened, what, 160, 170 years ago, we were looking at it was all kind of concentrated in a very similar area. You're back east, south versus the north, and it kind of felt like, I don't know if it was impossible to escape, but you could kind of, you would, I would imagine, stumble upon someone that you knew or someone who was fighting in the war. Whereas now, the United States is almost 3-4 times more, like, bigger and probably 20, like, 10 to 20 times more populous than it was during the Civil War era. So, I think it presents a new scenario where, with social media and the internet as well, what would this war look like? So, you see this group of people with Kaylee Spaney, Kirsten Dunst, and then I'll find the other guy's name in it. You also get Stephen McKinley Henderson, who is a treat. He's an absolute treat. He's in Lady Bird. If you've seen Lady Bird, he's also the calculations guy in Dune, and he's got some great moments in there as well. But as they're going through, Wagner Moura is the other character's name. They talk about, oh, the internet doesn't exist anymore, and they're trying to barter for gas in order to fill up their tanks. So there's this cool hints here and there of what life looks like, and you don't have to tell the audience. I've seen a lot of people being like, but how did it happen? How did it start? And I don't think that is the important thing that people should be taking from this film. What I think is important is that we recognize... This, from what I understand from Alex Garland and, like, you know, hearing interviews with him and hearing other people talk about it and kind of my own interpretation, is this feels like an alternate reality where it's a warning if we keep behaving the same way we behave with these different political factions and kind of the back and forth that we're seeing as things in the political spectrum being so polarizing. One big question that people are saying is California and Texas doesn't really make a lot of sense. That no shot that they would end up fighting together. And I think, you know, there was an interesting quote by Alex Garland. He basically said that even though they are two different places, they were able to put aside their differences long enough in order to fight against tyranny and fascism, which I found to be really interesting. Nick Offerman's character as the president has now entered into his third term. He's ignoring constitutions. He's disbanding governmental agencies, kind of like taking on the government as his own. And I thought that was a really interesting reading from him of, yeah, like, I think this would be it. And the more that, let's be honest, everyone, we all agree on about 90% of the same things. We all want to provide the best lives for our family. We want everyone to be safe, and we want to have more money in our pockets. That's kind of the same thing. So if those three things, any two groups of people could come together if they strongly believe enough that those three things are being infringed upon. And I would imagine that that's something that happened that started this civil war. And then they also talk about, like, Florida seceding. And the beginning of the movie starts off with a speech from the president giving a warning to these people. And as the journalists travel further south to D.C., they run into, you know, these different forces that are going to try to overtake and overthrow the president. And those moments are really, really good. You get a lot of great moments where a lot of the story is told via pictures that were actually taken by Kirsten Dunst and by Kaylee Spaney during filming. So as you're watching, there will be some moments that are just played out via still images. And those were really effective. There was a movie, it's a found footage film, and it's, oh, I forgot what it's called, but it's essentially a town gets wiped out. Everyone dies, and this one guy lives, and he captures the night that this all happened through one roll of film. And so it goes through everyone developing the film, looking at what happened, what could have possibly happened to this town because this man is being charged for murder. This is the film that it reminded me of. And it uses a lot of still images to progress the narrative of the film. And Civil War does something very similar that I think is effective. I also think that it's done through journalism. You know, the camera is a weapon. And sometimes your humanity goes in order to get the perfect shot. And you can make that, you know, relation to war. I just think that storytelling and filmmaking being kind of this metaphor for responsibility and artistic integrity, it's done better in The Fablemans and in Nightcrawler. I think that those films' ideas are much more focused, whereas this one kind of feels like it's trying to say a lot at one time. And it does, there are some great images and there's some great moments, but there's not a lot of progression for our characters. When it comes to the character progression, though, I do think that it serves a purpose to show, again, that this isn't so much like a theme, it's more so of a warning, where Kirsten Dunst's character is kind of like trying always to get the shot, and Kaylee Spaney's this newbie who's coming in to learn how to get the shot, and as Kirsten Dunst's character sees Kaylee Spaney's character evolve and learn to take the shot, she starts to grow a little bit more humanity. And it's kind of this cycle where, you know, as soon as someone falls out of the rotation, someone comes in to take their place. And I thought that was really interesting. There's a moment in the third act where they're at this kind of camp where the forces are going in to take over the White House. And one of the characters, Wagner Moura, kind of gets really upset and is like, oh, we missed the shot. The president is going to be taken out, blah, 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 blah. And then like 2 minutes later, they're in Washington, D.C., going to go find the president. And I didn't get where the gap was filled in there of, oh, so now do they just know? Like, how did they get there? Did they take their truck? It's really an abrupt jump cut. And it would have been nice to get some sort of, like, transitional, I don't know, editing, spatial editing to show, oh, now they're in Washington, D.C., specifically with those characters moving. There's a great sequence where they get, where they break their way into the White House to try to find the president to get this kind of last quote. And it leaves a really haunting last few images. Those last 5 minutes are pretty gnarly. But the big scene, my favorite scene, is the Jesse Plemons scene. The Jesse Plemons scene, they essentially, in the moment where they're trying to have some fun, Kaylee Spaney's character jumps into the car of just some friends that they're somewhat traveling with. And that car speeds off. And after a few moments, Kirsten Dunst is like, where the heck did they go? So they're speeding off and they get run off the road by some military vehicle and they, you know, course correct and they find the car that Kaylee Spaney's characters jumped into, but the doors are open and the driver and her are gone. And that's when they stumble upon Jesse Plemons and a few other kind of rogue agents have the two characters at gunpoint and are like, hey, we're going to kill you. At this same moment, it actually is revealed that they have been digging this mass grave where they're just executing people and putting their bodies into this grave. And that is the big reveal and the very haunting image you get from Kaylee Spaney's character. But Kirsten Dunst and Wagner Moura decide, okay, we're going to go talk to him. Stephen McKinley Henderson stays behind because basically you say, you're too old and you're not going to be able to run away from them. So you stay behind. So he stays with the car and they go approach him. And it's about 3 to 4 minutes of super, super tense filmmaking and editing. The sound design for all the gunshots and all of the different sound effects are really, really great. They're really effective. And it is a loud film. So if that's something that like you're really excited about, if you're a little bit hesitant about guns, it's a little intense. But that was a very good sequence. Probably one this that and then the sequence of them getting into the White House is really, really great. There's some really great sequences, but sometimes altogether the movie doesn't work as well as you would hope. It's probably my least favorite of Alex Garland's films. I have it at a B+ suite. There are some intense images, but I don't think it's anything super crazy that any of y'all couldn't handle. That being said, When I talk about all you sweets, let's take a look at what y'all said about Civil War, because I know a few of y'all went and saw it. I know a few of y'all have some thoughts about the film. So let's take a look at it. Let's take a look and see what y'all have to say. All right. The first thing is, generally speaking, y'all have it kind of in between sweet and sour, and I would partially agree. I have it a little bit more sweet because I do think most people can handle it. The sourness would probably come from the violence. But some of the reviews that we have here, one of them is from Sprank Derv, B+, impossible to summarize my thoughts in an Insta comment. I would agree. Emma Hall, 16, insane. I've never been in a theater with a crowd where the silence was so loud. The sound, yeah, the sound is nuts. And then Hamblino has it at a C+. Overall, I think if I had to give like an overall grade based on all of those thoughts, everything that I have, it seems like Civil War is sitting at like a B+. So it's certainly worth your time. Go try and see it in IMAX if you can. It is A24's biggest opening ever for a feature film, and is their first number one debuting film as well, with about $25.5 million at the box office. I enjoyed it. Some things I don't love, but what I do love definitely outweighs the stuff that I didn't think worked for me. Next week, next take, me and TC are going to be talking about something. Maybe we'll do a catch up. We'll look at some movies that are coming out. We've got blockbuster season is upon us. So I'm excited to talk about all that and more. Love you all. And as always, please, 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 please stay so sweet. Sweet. Thank you.